I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. And though you, the listener, may not realize because of how we release the podcast, but it has been a little while since we have sat down to record. But the band is back together. On bass is Father Garrett Burns. Ooh,
what's up?
And over on keyboards is Father Drew Hoffman.
It's actually a keytar. Look at that. Oh, my gosh.
I took piano for 6 years as a kid and hated every second of it. And I cannot play piano for a moment
now. I was
going to
say, you can't plunk anything out.
And it's a great example of, like, C.S. Lewis talks about the kid learning Greek. Can't fathom how fun it will be to read the Odyssey. That's a good example. Like, kids, if any kids are listening to this and your parents are making you play an instrument, listen to your parents. I wish I could play the piano. Like, how great would it be if I could just enjoy the piano? How relaxing and gifting that would be. But I was so dumb and arrogant as a sixth grade kid and refused to. And so
I would kill to be able to play an instrument.
That'd be fun, man.
That would be like, that is my great dream. Do you play anything, Garrett?
Just the guitar. Yeah,
he's good at the guitar.
When I was an associate down in Pittsburgh with Rick Caterba, he got it in his head he was going to learn piano, which is really respectable at, you know, 27 years old, which is also a very Caterba thing to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, the busy schedule of a priest doesn't allow it. So he got a piano and moved it into the rectory. I think I saw him play it twice in a year's time. It didn't quite take. So
I've texted my brother so many times, like, hey, can you send me the chords for this song I'm going to learn on piano? He's like, dude, no, you're not.
No, you're not.
He knows you.
Since we've been gone, the diplomas in here, Chad, have multiplied.
They've grown.
I'm looking
there's
at five of Chad's high school diplomas just in my
got a
very
bumper sticker. And one of the diplomas is deceptive. If you look closely at that, it's actually a hand done copy
that
one of the seminarians did during the silent retreat. So really prayerful. They've been practicing calligraphy and all of those things. So if you look closely at that, that is done completely by hand.
Yeah. Well, they did a good job.
Yeah, it really does.
I didn't tell you. They left it on my desk as a surprise. And I saw it there. I'm like, who's been messing with my desk? And so I just put it over in the corner without even, and he's like, do you like the gift? But it's impressive. It was so good. I did not realize it wasn't just one of the printed copies. Well,
the fruit of their prayer.
That is, didn't Jared say that the other day that he drew something during a
retreat?
And things like that. Jerome Spexarth, I know, has done that. That's just never been.
We had a few guys here in the past that, they'd take their easel up like on the roof and pray in silent retreat, just kind of pray and draw. And Sam Schmidt's a really good artist.
Yeah, that's right.
He'll draw occasionally on retreats. And so another talent I don't possess, but I would love to be able to. We are rocking out in the studio today of Saint Junipero Serra.
Ooh.
I don't know how, that's another one. I don't know how we've made it a year and a half without, you know, one of the patrons of vocations, and somehow it's kind of embarrassing that we forgot about him.
Yeah, we are ashamed of you, Chad, but
I'm using we very
the royal we.
Yes. Yes. You guys share fault for that. Well, the week that this comes out is the week that Lent starts. But before Lent gets going, we have Fat Tuesday. Do you guys have any traditions for Fat Tuesday, or did you grow up with any traditions of Fat Tuesday? It's something that kind of, I felt like it came later in my life. It wasn't made a deal of when I was a kid. Mom might mention, oh yeah, today's Fat Tuesday. Here's some cake, maybe?
Yeah, I don't remember big stuff of, other than if you're giving up candy, you would kind of like eat a bunch or more than normal candy that night. I think when we were at KU, we had like a pancakes night?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because
that's kind of the traditional.
That's the tradition. Do you know why that's the tradition?
No.
The pancake tradition?
Got to use up like the butter and fat, right?
You had to use up everything that was in the fridge back in the day. So pancakes were something you could just throw, I mean, 1,000 years ago, that you could throw basically everything that was in your fridge in and make, even before pancakes, these kind of breaded type of food. Because you back in the day, Lent was real. You couldn't have butter. You couldn't have fat.
It was real.
These real.
Not like these imaginary Lents we live through these days.
Well, it's not wrong, but... Yeah, I think you're right. We did have a pancake. We had a contest who could eat the most pancakes. Yeah. Maybe
that
one
sounds
night
awful. I'm not a big pancake guy.
College student centers love doing Mardi Gras parties. Like, that's my experience of Mardi Gras. When we were in high school, I don't ever remember at Carol S doing anything. Yeah. Not that necessarily, why would we?
Right.
But at KU, we did. At seminary, there's always there's almost always a party.
Something going
there's always
on,
a party
right?
for seminary yeah. on Mardi Gras. And then at St. Isidore's and St. Paul, we'll have a big party at, on Mardi Gras. It's a pretty easy night. We'll get a bunch of randos that I've never seen before. It's like, yeah, Mardi Gras. People, Ash Wednesday is the biggest day of the year on a college
yeah,
campus.
Yeah.
Which, again, is such a
everywhere.
Strange deal. Yeah, and that's
everywhere.
And that in parishes across the country. And so Mardi Gras with it, people are like, okay, I'm going to get things right. I'm going to start.
This is how we start.
Yeah.
We do a little something here at the house for the last several years, Fat Tuesday. It's traditionally pastor's night. So that's the night we invite pastors that have guys here in the house.
Uh-oh.
So we order food so the guys don't have to cook. So it is a nicer meal because we'll order in something. We have our baker make us some king's cakes, which I don't actually like king's
cakes. I don't like king's cakes.
She makes a killer one.
Okay.
It is the best. Shout out to Monica. She makes the best king cakes I've ever had in my life. But yeah, as cakes go, it's kind of like pancakes. I'm like, this is more of a punishment that this is for dinner than really a celebration. But it's a fun night at the house because the priests come in, they hang out a little bit, and no one has to cook or do dishes. So that's about as celebratory as we get for Fat Tuesday.
The last 2 years as a priest, I've helped out at other parishes' first confessions. I don't know if
Tuesday?
I don't know if they just didn't realize it or what.
Yeah, that seems weird to me.
Huh.
So we hung out, you know, as the priest after the first confession, which is usual.
Cool.
But yeah, I didn't know if that was intentional or just they didn't realize what they were doing. But
I was helping out just Sunday at first confessions. And you know, it was something I used to do all the time in the parish. I'm a little rusty at first confessions. I forgot how, especially because I'm coming into the parish. And so I'm the stranger priest. So the kids don't know me. And so there were definitely some
real
that
nervous.
I don't think of myself as a scary person, but they were terrified in that room.
Well, I feel this. I never hear kids' confessions.
Yeah.
In my whole priesthood, I very rarely heard kids' confessions.
Yeah.
And so when a kid comes in or a first confession, I've done that once or twice. Yeah, I'm not.
You're as nervous as they are.
Yeah, that's right. They're more scared of you. Yeah, you're more scared of them than they are than you.
Well, how about Lent? Any good advice for our listeners out there that are about to make it a real Lent,
real.
As it were? Not one of these fake ones that are so popular in the social medias today.
So a few things I always tell people, maybe three things I always tell people. One, do something in all three facets, which is prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. That gives you a real easy, pick one of each.
Mm-hmm.
One of each gives you kind of a role of self-gift, discipline, and prayer, and all of those. And you guys probably will touch on that. One of the best things that I ever had to do for Lent is my spiritual director at Conception made me call three people a week that I would not have called otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the creative aspect of that. So that might be an encouragement of something a little different, maybe something you wouldn't expect, something that is a little different other than the kind of very typical, like use it to be a little creative perhaps. And then my favorite image of Lent, and I talk about Genesis 32, which is Jacob wrestling with, and you've got the image with the angel.
Mm-hmm.
I love that as an image of Lent.
Hmm.
Stick with the fight. You'll get hit. You'll have some ups. You'll have some downs. You'll be limping a little bit. But if you lock on in the fight for 40 days and not say, hey, maybe we'll try again next year, you can have a new name and have something new at the end. But see it as a wrestling match. Ash Wednesday, we'll use the word campaign in the collect at the start. So see it as a battle and see if you'll stick out the battle throughout the 40 days.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, the three things, pick one thing for each. And for almsgiving, the last several years, I've liked to do, I heard of the practice of a Lenten purge of getting rid of some clothes or some things. If you have kids, like toys, you know, that's a time to
that seems to be more popular.
To minimize.
I've heard it too, yeah.
And for me, that practice became a lot more fruitful when I didn't just try to give away a lot of things that honestly I didn't already want or I wasn't using, but pick my favorite jacket or my favorite, you know, t-shirt or whatever it is, the thing I really like. Like that's more of a detachment in a God is everything, so I don't need this thing that I really enjoy, rather than just I gave away two bags of clothes that I wasn't going to wear anyway. Well, that's not a huge gift. And for me, I would rather do maybe something smaller that I'm gonna for sure make it the 40 days and even after. Like the goal isn't just to do this for 40 days and just go back to it. So I've never done Exodus 90 and stuff. To me, that's kind of the epitome of doing all the things really intense, going hard. But I've never done it, so I can't speak to its effectiveness. But for me, I've just rather done, I'm going to pick one thing and do it really well for 40 days, and hopefully that keeps going after the 40 days. So
yeah, I like that approach. It's like, you know, losing weight. Okay, I can spend 40 days and lose 10 pounds and then put it all back on, but that kind of defeats the purpose. You want to carry some of those things forward. Yeah, I'm the same way. I like using the three different categories. I've done kind of the giving away articles. I like that. I'm not as much of a phone talker, but someone recommended, you know, writing one thank you, just a note of gratitude a week. And I liked that the year I did that. One of the things that's been helpful to me, and I don't know if it's just how my mind works, but someone had required me to do this in seminary. I try and do it since, is I write down what I'm giving up for Lent. So I got like a little 5x10 note card, whatever you call it. 5x10. I don't know if that's
huge. Yeah, that's the biggest note card in the history of the world, Chad.
I like everyone to know what I'm doing for
just
Lent.
Like sticking out of your wall. I didn't know that fell out there, that you even saw that.
Oh, look at all the things I'm doing. How embarrassing.
Since the Ash Wednesday homily is, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing.
Whatever the size of your standard note card is, I like to write it down and stick it in my breviary. Just as a reminder, it gives some concreteness to it. Yeah. It also helps, like, you know, when you're 2/3 of the way and you're waffling, like, well, what did I really mean when I said I was giving this up? And it's kind of neat, too. I've kept some of them so I can see where I've been over the Lent over the years. And that's kind of an interesting thing. Just like you were saying, Garrett, there's some things I'm starting, like, heck, I just started that in Lent 4 years ago. And I'm still doing that. That's kind of cooler. Or no, I need to get back to that, whatever it may be. So I like that a lot.
One of the things that, and this might not be helpful if you're not listening to this right when it comes out, but do take the time. Like, I know that had been my experience before I was a priest, and even it can sneak up on you as a priesthood at Mardi Gras maybe, or I always tell people that are like walking out of Ash Wednesday, they're like, I should probably think of something. So you just give up what you've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
If you're listening to this on Monday, take 48 hours and think through it instead of just choosing something on Ash Wednesday. If you choose something on Ash Wednesday, it'd still be fruitful. It still can.
Right.
But think of some stuff and give yourself some runway so that you've really discerned a little bit what you're going to do instead of just, because what you'll end up doing is, I'll just do what I did last year. That being said, we're going to have I don't know what you call, like a Wheel of Fortune thing outside of St. Paul on Ash Wednesday, which will have different things you can give up for people who haven't thought of what they can give up. And one of them is cook a meal for Father Drew.
Nice. Yes.
It's a great discernment tool. If you can't discern for yourself what you should give up, let me tell you.
Fortune!
We need one of those in the vocations office. Just as people are walking out of Quo Vadis, they just got to spin the wheel. And where will I be in the fall?
Consecrated single life!
I was going to say a great thing nowadays, I think, to sacrifice during Lent would be some form of screen time, social media technology. Yep. Of course, not podcasts. You want to maybe even double up on podcasts.
Share it with a friend. Yeah,
exactly. One of the things I used to encourage guys to do, and they kind of like too, with the social media aspect, is with their smartphones, just setting it to grayscale for Lent. Because again, it's one of those things, like every time you pull it out, you're reminded of it and it kind of sucks a little bit. Like, well, why am I doing this? Yeah. And so it's just a constant in front of them. And because those phones are so geared to keep us attached to them, just by putting it in grayscale, it makes it a lot easier to step back from it a little bit more. I knew a guy too, it was clever. He gave up the snooze button for Lent, which doesn't seem like that much unless you're not a morning person. And because he, like many of us, his morning self is not as rational as the later self. So he's still struggling with reminding himself in the morning not to hit the snooze. So he taped thumbtacks to the snooze button so he could not hit it in the morning.
That's real Lent.
That's real Lent.
Augustine has this great line, and obviously they didn't have a snooze button back then, but basically snooze button is sin, because what happens when you hit the snooze button or you go back to sleep just for a little bit? You wake up later with less of the day and you don't actually feel better. Like, you don't hit the snooze button, you're like, okay, now I'm ready to go. Yeah. So that's how sin is.
Those 7 minutes.
I wish that worked that way.
He's like, that's how sin is. You've lost opportunities and you don't feel any better. Sometimes you even feel worse about yourself afterward.
That's good.
I always like that as an image.
Good. I think one of the weirdest penances or Lenten things I knew a guy. We all know you meet some unique characters in seminary, very well-meaning people. And, you know, back in the day, a hair shirt was a thing.
Jeez.
But he wasn't going to do that. But I think this idea came from a famous episode of Seinfeld. And he realized if he just trimmed the hair on his chest, it would begin to itch like a hair shirt. And true. So he would just trim his chest hair through Lent because of how uncomfortable it made him.
Jeez, that's making me uncomfortable.
Seinfeld, not a great place to go for your Lenten practices.
I pick all my penances from Seinfeld.
That would
Seinfeld.
Be a great podcast. You only can eat the bottom of the muffins. Yeah, you don't ever get to eat the top of a muffin.
One final controversial subject on Lent before we move on from that. Sundays and penances. Where do you guys fall on that?
For me, yeah, it depends on the goal or the
how
like,
hard the penance is.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. No, if it's one of those things like I was talking about where I want to keep going after 40 days, well, mm-hmm. then I shouldn't take a break once a week. But if it's just like, I don't know, maybe just a sacrifice that I'm really just trying to unite to the cross, then I should have maybe a little Easter on Sunday and a break from that and have a little treat to celebrate that. I think I'm fine with that. But if you're trying to build a habit, you need consecutive, you need time to build
that's
that.
That's a really good clarification.
Absolutely a great clarification, because sometimes in people who are like, who are very anti using Sunday as a break are like, you can't do it for 40 days. The goal isn't always just to be tough for 40 right. days. Mm-hmm. And then again, it's the difference between being flexible and being fluid. A flexible thing bends and then snaps back. Fluid thing fills up the space that it's given. So I think it totally is dependent on the thing. Just being tough for 40 days has some elements of it. But if you're not, you might just go back to that thing at the end. And so sometimes the Sunday, maybe to treat it like a little Easter, keep holy the Sabbath, may then get this thing, which is a good back in balance mm-hmm. for how you relate to it. Now, obviously what you can't do is, hey, I gave up TV, so I'm gonna watch 6 episodes on Sunday. So you gotta be a little careful
yeah.
there.
For me too, the fasting part, if I'm fasting from something that, you know, is not bad in and of itself, having some of that on Sunday is actually, for me, helpful in the long run, because it's kind of part of the training of, well, how do I reintroduce this in a right. measured amount? Because mm-hmm. a lot of people, well, I gave up chocolate for 6 days and Sunday, I'm going to eat as much chocolate as I can. And that's not helpful. But I'm like, no, I'm just going to have a little piece of chocolate. And then it's part of my mind frame of, someday this is going to step back into my life, but I want it to be in a more controlled right. version of whatever right. it is. So I think Sundays can aid that as well.
Yeah, virtue's in the mean. So if you can mm-hmm. help to establish that, that's the goal.
Yeah. Well, to all of our listeners out there, a happy and a fruitful Lent. I hope it's a real Lent for you.
Make it real.
Make it real. That's the tagline for Lent this year. Make it real.
There's a tower in Germany called the Butter Tower because people used to have to give up butter for Lent. But you could pay to not have to give up butter. And that's how they built this tower, was the fees that they charged.
Where do you learn this?
Which like, is like, this is how the Protestant Reformation started, people. This is why people got mad at the church. Chad, knowledge is everywhere.
What are you Googling knowledge where you find butter tower in Germany?
It does happen
Germany.
All the time that I'll walk down in the basement in the morning. I'm like, students, I got to talk to you about Shackleton. Because I read a lot of Wikipedia articles about Ernest Shackleton last night.
It's so true.
You'll never believe the 7 most deserted places on earth.
Do they listen to you?
No, they get so annoyed. They do not think it's interesting.
That happens to me on like documentaries that I watch on Netflix while I'm working out. Like the next day at dinner, I'm like, I know important things are happening in your guys' life, but you've got to hear about Spanish bull jumping right now because it is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Well, not only has it been a little while since we've been in the studio together, it's been a little while since we've done Alexio episode. And so I wanted to do one of those today. And I was just talking to Drew and Garrett beforehand, maybe a shorter Alexio because it's not a long passage. And I kind of chose it for selfish reasons because there's some things I like about choosing it, but we'll just give it over to the Holy Spirit and see where we go. So this comes from Matthew chapter 13, verses 44 through 47. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then in his joy he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls, who on finding one pearl of great value went and sold all that he had and bought it. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net which was thrown into the sea and gathered fish of every kind. I chose that verse primarily because that is one of my, in my private prayer, one of my favorite ways that I refer to my priesthood is that pearl of great price. I don't know if other people use terms like that always in their individual prayer, but that is how I think of my priesthood. It's one of the common analogies that I use in my individual prayers. It is that pearl of great price that everything else was worth sacrificing for. But that's the principal reason I chose that, because I can't think of my priesthood without that scriptural passage. And so I just wanted to talk with you guys about it and take some time to pray with it.
So first thing that came to my mind is the covered up. He found and covered up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. That struck with me because in my prayer the last week or two, this was the time period in which I discerned joining the seminary of like January, February. I remember all the dates. February 5th, I remember was the date I kind of finally decided. February 7th, I called called Father Mike and asked about a meeting. It was that next weekend that he was coming up to meet with Father Garrett already and things like that. So that was the experience, though, because there's like a finding in that moment. And then there's a covering up of years of formation in which I still know the treasure is there and I maybe don't notice it and I don't see it, but it is there. And there will be a time perhaps when I'm able to come back and get it, which is my priesthood. And you got to be a little, that's my personal experience. I'm going to be a little careful there, but that's what that phrase covered up struck out to me for that reason, because seminary then can be that experience of like, I know it's there, but I'm not in the like weeds of living out the priesthood.
Yeah.
It's already, but not yet in a certain sense.
That really resonates with me. And I just think that's spot on, because that's one of the things I think about with the seminarians a lot is you get attracted, you step into seminary because this idea of doing ministry and you're doing all of these things is super attractive and engaging, and in seminary is necessary and good, and you do some of that, but it does feel like you're away from that treasure, that this is what I'm going for, but I'm not yet allowed to handle it in the ways I want. And then you come to the priesthood, like suddenly this whole treasure of the priesthood is just laid before you. I love that.
Like you've sold all that you have and it's covered up, but maybe the transaction hasn't been completed yet. There's something that is, you know, it takes time for that pearl eventually, the treasure to eventually get to you. I want to be sensitive and a little careful because that can seem transactional and be weird, but.
But I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was praying like with the merchant. I think it goes something together with that. I remember Erasmo has a line about that of like, in the end, the pearl and the merchant deserved each other because there had been this maturation process in both of them. Like a pearl, I don't know the exact science of it, but it like develops in an oyster, right? There was a definite time period of its development. But then the merchant as well had spent a lot, maybe his whole life, and he had developed his eye for finding a good pearl. He had gotten some good ones and he had figured out the best way to seek them out and to test them and all these things. There's this development process in both. Maybe similar to, that's your time in seminary of you found this pearl, but you still need to develop a sensitivity in your eye and touch to be able to like really understand the gift and receive it fully so that in joy you can sell all that you have and receive that the two deserve each other and are developing towards each other. And that's more of that. It's not transactional. It's a relational, like a vocation that's meant for you from God to you and you to God. So.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that either. I mean, just the developing of the eye towards the pearl of, because I don't know anything about pearls. I could walk by and is that a good pearl? Or I wouldn't know, but someone who has developed their eye and same thing with the relationship with God, be able to recognize where he's blessing and working. And I can see that in my life. Like I am more attuned to how richly the Lord is blessing me than I was 10 years ago. But it took some maturing of the eye to see, well, this has already been a very profitable session for me.
I like that the verb is found in the first image and search in the second image. Almost as if one stumbles upon it and one is going after. Because I found vocations do happen in both of those ways. Not just like, oh, geez, I'm supposed to be a priest. But it isn't as if, and we're going to talk about this next episode, being like on the hunt for my vocation. There has to be an intentionality, but there's also an element of surprise to it, like a finding. Like as I'm walking along in a forest almost, again, I'm going after it, but I'm surprised by joy and surprised by the gift. But I also have to search for it, but it's not an expedition. There's somewhere, and for each man, it's going to happen a little different, but it's going to bounce even back and forth between those poles.
You can't just sit on the couch, but you can't say, I'm going to just study the map and X marks the spot. And it's just like there's a combination of those two things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that strikes me as I was praying with it just yesterday is it talks about, you know, selling everything to claim this pearl or this treasure. And when I was in seminary or in discernment, I felt like I was giving up a lot of treasures and things to go for this pearl. And as I knew it at the time, I was. And now that I feel I more fully possess this pearl or more fully possess this treasure, I'm like, I didn't give up nearly what this is worth. And there's even a question, they're like, okay, Lord, I know I don't even have all of the treasure. There's greater treasure out there yet in that relationship and the debt with you. What are you going to ask me to give up? And some days that's a haunting thought, and the evil one will kind of play with that. It'll fill me with a little bit of anxiety. And some days that's an exciting thought. I'm like, yeah, I know there's a field with an even greater treasure. I'm going to have to let go of some of these things, but I trust you and I love you, and I want to give that up. So depending on what mood I'm in, projecting in the future is how I feel. But right now I look and I'm like, oh man, I got a way better deal on again, getting into the transactional problem. But I did not nearly give up so much as I thought I did and got so much more in return in my priesthood.
Yeah, it's such a rare line, or just like enjoy, he gave up all. Like, we don't usually do that. We're talking about Lent and almsgiving, and usually it's like a force, like, all right, I'm going to make this donation or I'm going to give up this thing. But it was like, he was just like, I don't know what else I would do, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so enjoy, I'm giving up everything else.
I love that, enjoy. Yeah.
And I think that was my experience. I think I've shared this before. Like, there was even some people that were like, well, shouldn't you just at least stay at KU and finish your college degree? And that seems just like rational, right? Of like, well, it would be a little safer if you kept some of those pearls back.
Mm-hmm.
I know you found this one you really like, but I mean, you've worked your whole life and you found some that are at least pretty good value. So like, keep some of those and that'll just be a little safer. And it's almost like for one that's encountered the pearl of great price, it's like, I didn't even think of that. Like, why would I ever not give up all of this stuff in joy for that pearl of great price?
Mm-hmm.
And that was my experience. That was hard to explain at the time, maybe even too. And good on those people we've talked about before. That's their job to like make sure we're thinking through it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, from my experience, we're just like, I've this is the pearl of great price. I'll give up anything for it.
And I love that it transfers from the plural to the singular. So this merchant is in search of fine pearls. Like, there's this like plethora of pearls, or there's several pearls, or these, all of this like variety of, you know, I'll get this pearl and this pearl and this pearl. And then he finds one. And what's a saint? Someone who wants the one thing. And that's then the experience of this one is so much better than six or seven others. Cause that's usually how I see the world. If I can cobble together a good family life and a good job and good friends, then some hobbies that I like, and if the Chiefs win this weekend and like enough good pearls, then I'll be happy. This person realizes that if I have the one pearl, then everything else will fall into place. But it's the movement from the plural to the singular, which brings real joy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that reminds me, one of the common struggles I see today, and people just have to be reminded of, in order to say yes to something, it means you have to say no to other things too. And so many of the young people I see are frozen in indecision because they know they want something, but they're not willing to say no to something else in order to get it. And you can't have it all. That's not how it works. In order to be able to say yes to something, you are always going to have to say no to some other things to make that happen. And we tend then to focus, well, I don't want to say no to these. Well, look at what you're saying yes to as well. Don't forget about that. And that is that pearl of great price that is so worth saying yes to if that comes before you.
This last verse is different. I'm interested in your guys's, like, these two make perfect sense together, the pearl of great price and the treasure. And then this other one is like an active, it's not a finding or searching. Is it like the consequence of finding the pearl? I'm interested in your thoughts here, because then there's like a fishing, and maybe it's the catching of many of the fish, but it seems slightly different to me.
It is, and I cut it a little short in the reading. It gets a little apocalyptic in the next several versions, or next several verses in there. For me, when I pray with that particular verse, it talks about fish of every kind. It brings to mind the blessings I never saw coming, you know. Okay, the pearl and the treasure, you know, that's that's God, and I had a great mind, a focused mind on that, whereas the fish from all over are all these other periphery blessings that I never thought I would know or enjoy, I wasn't expecting for, and then all of these came into it. That's where my prayer leads me with it.
Yeah, I'd agree, and just that, the balance of what you're talking about, you got to go out and throw out your net, but you just never know what is going to happen. There's still a surprise to it, and just a catch, and like I said, that variety of the blessings in it, I think, yeah, that's what comes to my mind.
So I've been reading Silmarillion after Father Elise. Father
I Jared bought it. I haven't opened it up
talked
yet.
Talked about it. And you know, one of the the haunting things about it is the Silmarils, these jewels, they just stare at. They just stare at. Morgoth, when he steals it, when they get it back, they just look at it. They've got this magnificent jewel. They just stare at it. And so this is like the antithesis of that. Maybe even after I catch the pearl of great price, do I cling to it? I found that that in my, you know, my life of, am I clinging to, okay, is everything going right? Is everything, this is the pearl. This is how my life is supposed to go. This is how my vocation, my priesthood is supposed to go. And there's always then going to be like this unclenching and this giving away of throwing the net then in. Like, I've received the jewel. I've received the pearl. I've received the treasure. Now, somehow I have to return that, give that out, because there's fish of every kind that are in need of the blessings Jesus Christ has provided to me. And I found the pearl, and I'm one beggar, one another beggar, maybe to know where to find some food.
Well, just like in my vocation, I have been pleasantly surprised or well rewarded with, honestly, I wasn't sure if there was going to be as much lecture, but I prayed with it last night. I'm going to pray with it again today in the Holy Hour. That's some great things in there. So thank you both for that. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I have the final word today, and it comes from Thérèse of Lisieux. She says, "To have beautiful and holy thoughts, to write books on the lives of the saints, all of this does not count so much as answering as soon as you are called." See you next week.